Nick is back.
Hello.
How are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm
sorry I missed last week.
You know,
but it was a great show.
Hey, it is okay.
I get nervous sometimes when the shows are really good when I'm not there, and how good of a job Hannah does also when she does fill in to replace me from time to time, and I'm like, oh man, maybe you don't need me.
Listen, you are always gonna be part of the show. Regardless, welcome back, sir.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Good to have you. And we have a metric fuck ton of stories to get through.
It's a packed story.
It is.
Packed week.
Yes. Yes. I know where your brain's at. You're all right. You're good.
All good.
You're good. So without further ado, let's kind of dive into those stories. And Nicholas, what's the first story on the docket?
Yes, our first story is coming to us from Deadline. And it's kind of a follow-up to a story we've been tracking for a little bit. And that has to do with Roadhouse, the new Jake Gyllenhaal and directed by Doug Liman movie on Amazon. For those that may remember, we kind of had a bit of a... Doug Liman kind of came out pretty against Amazon and what they were doing with the movie in terms of distribution. And we kind of thought that Jake Gyllenhaal was really involved in that controversy kind of heavily as the star of the movie. Well, that's not the case.
It doesn't appear to be so.
No, because following Roadhouse's success, Jake Gyllenhaal's Nine Stories production inks a first-look film pact with Amazon MGM Studios.
Yeah, so looks like maybe Jake Gyllenhaal was leaning a little bit more towards Amazon on that that proxy
Just
fight.
A wee bit.
Not a proxy fight, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I had the Disney one in my brain. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. This is huge news, and it follows up on also other stories of last week of just how many actors seems to be making overall deals with studios. Like, it tends to be a trend that we're seeing a lot. We had Chalamet and Gosling and others, and yes, like Gyllenhaal, some of those are attached to mostly be as a producer, but you know it's going to be a vehicle for them to kind of star in their own roles as
like
well.
To do this movie.
Yes, exactly. So I'm going to pull from Deadline here. Yeah. Amazon MGM Studios has closed a three-year first-look film deal with Jake Gyllenhaal's Nine Stories following the rousing success of his movie Roadhouse on Prime Video, which was the most-watched original movie for the studio ever, with 50 million global viewers in the pick's first 2 weeks. Under the actor's new deal, Amazon MGM will have a first look on any narrative features, again, narrative features, not TV. Nine Stories intends to produce for both theatrical and streaming, both thrown in there. Good for Jake.
Mm-hmm.
What I find funny is... it's a three-year deal, so one movie. Like, I don't know.
I imagine it would probably be, like, for movies being developed for the next, like, three. Not, like, in terms of filmed, wrapped, and released, but sort of, like, in that third year, let's say he's like, oh, I want to do this. And then they go, okay, well, we can put it on the docket for now. I feel like it's that kind of a situation. Yeah,
it probably is, but, you know, I just...
It
I
is
just,
funny, yeah.
I find that the time frame is funny. But yeah, essentially, the article goes into a bit more specifics, talks about, you know, just his past career and everything. But, yeah, again, I wanted to follow up on this and just kind of... It's an interesting trend that we're seeing go on with these, you know, actors kind of taking a little producing, putting on a producing hat, making these first look deals, and then giving themselves a vehicle to star in these films. Mm-hmm. Don't have to audition, don't have to do any of that shit. Hey, I want to make this movie. All right, let's make it. Good for them.
Yeah.
You know? And Jake Gyllenhaal, hopefully he gets to make a movie about the sea. That would be really great if he was able to.
He swims in the sea.
I love how, by the way, that story came out about him like...
Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing happened.
Nothing. Not only did nothing happen, no one's asked him. Like, here's the thing. Yeah. I don't have guts, right?
For context, yes, you might not know, there was this story that came out a few weeks ago. I think we talked about it briefly on the show as well. That sort of this indie film set was kind of in general disarray and uproar, mostly because of some issues that they were having with star Jake Gyllenhaal on it. Where he was kind of being, I think, verbally abusive was part of it.
Just kind of going...
Just going crazy, saying things like jumping in the ocean and saying, when I see the sea, I swim in the sea. And nothing came out about it being like a bit.
Yeah,
like,
no.
It was like
a
confirmed story.
Yeah. But like, what's funny is not only did nothing happen, like no one asked Jake about it. And he just did press for Roadhouse. Like I was like,
movie surrounded by water.
Yeah.
You think one person.
I was like, oh, someone's going to say... Like, even if they don't say, like, is this true? Someone's going to be like, hey, you see the sea?
You swim in the sea.
You know, and just kind of have him be like, what? Like nothing happened. Like, I expected something to happen, which I just thought was funny. But yes, anyway, getting off topic. What do you guys think about Jake Gyllenhaal and his production company making a first look deal with Amazon? Does this excite you? Does it not? Let us know as we move on to our next story. Nicholas, what do you got for us next?
Our next story also comes to us from Deadline. This is an exciting one for the movie nights, as longtime fans of Kevin Smith.
Correct.
Anyone who's watched the show knows, also more specifically, how big of a Kevin Smith fan Dalton is.
Yes.
Having met him once, twice?
Met him once and went to the Quick Stop once.
He did go to the Quick Stop. His new comedy, titled The 4:30 Movie, has been acquired by Saban Films.
Yes, and this is interesting because they also were the distributor on Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, and they really liked working with him because of all the Blu-ray. Like, it was one of the few, like, physical media did really well for Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, which is interesting. But I'm going to take from Deadline here. Saban Films has acquired the worldwide rights to the 4:30 movie, the latest film written and directed by Kevin Smith. The film marks the second collaboration for Saban and Smith on the heels of 2019's Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, which scored one of the top per theater average openings of the year amongst titles like Parasite and Avengers Endgame. They have a really good PR team over at Saban. Set in 1986, the coming-of-age comedy follows three 16-year-old friends, played by Austin Sajur, Nicholas Creo, and Reed Northup, who spend their Saturdays sneaking into movies at the local multiplex, but when one of the guys also invites the girl of his dreams, played by Sienna Ogdong, forgive me if I said that wrong, to see the latest comedy, each of the teens will learn something serious about life and love before the credits roll. This sounds wonderful.
It does, and to go on more great cast of newcomers, I'm going to assume. Never heard of any of them before, but in terms of a sporting cast, you know, he's got, what, Ken Jeong from The Hangover and Community, Sam Richardson from Veep, Genesis Rodriguez, who we worked with in Tusk, Justin Long, who we love here.
Yes, fucking love him.
Jason Lee, longtime collaborator of Kevin Smith's. Rachel Drash, SNL fame. Kate Micucci of, I think she had a brief stint on SNL as well. I could be wrong, but she's shown up in comedy.
No.
Adam Pauly, who's going to be in The Knuckles Show.
Yes.
And his daughter, Harley Quinn Smith.
Yep, and Method Man.
Oh, shit, and Method Man.
It's going to be so exciting.
Yes.
But also something that I find interesting is they shot the movie at the movie theater that he bought in New Jersey. Because the reason why he bought the movie theater was because it was going to get torn down. And he was like, nope. And he bought it and it became Smod Castle Cinema. I'm a huge fan of his, somehow ended up on their newsletter for emails.
Yeah.
Don't know what happened. I must have bought something, put in my email.
Probably when you bought the ticket to the clerk's thing.
But not. I get emails about all the movies that play there, and it sounds like a good time. But
listen, if there's one man who knows the definition of the term synergy, it's Kevin Smith.
Absolutely.
That man is always selling something. So the fact that he owns a movie theater is like, I'm going to make a movie.
At the movie theater.
At the movie theater.
That I own.
And I'm going to pay myself for that.
We're not going to pay permits. Nope. It's at the theater. But listen, this subject matter excites me because Clerks 3 recently came out, and I know some people think otherwise. I really liked Clerks 3.
I did too.
And I think that the subject material being around films and filmmaking really kind of brought out the Kevin Smith, the director that we know and love, and why we fell in love with him and his movies. I say we. I'll speak for myself personally. But this idea of making a movie about movies, you know, you can tell there's going to be a personal part of this. And the fact that it's an original, you know, it's not part of the Viewers universe that we know of, we'll see.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see that he's making this film and he just seems genuinely excited and like wants to make this film. Like, I'm really, really happy about that.
And it'll be interesting to see too, because I know people really like the Viewers universe.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting to see something original, if that is the case, you know, not kind of relying on the nostalgia of everything. Because I really did like Clerks 3 a lot, but it is a nostalgia movie, like Reboot, you know. And I know some of his other original ventures don't really kind of pan out to that extent. But I honestly wouldn't even be surprised if one of these characters is kind of supposed to be a representation of Kevin Smith having gone to the theater.
And it takes place in the 80s. So to me, like, I say, oh, it's not in the Viewers universe. Would I love it if there was like a young Jay and Silent Bob in the movie? I would love that, you know?
It's his Fablemans.
That would be great. I mean, Clerks 3 was kind of his Fablemans.
That's fair. Is he going to be touring this one?
I don't know.
I know that's been like a big thing, but Saban picking it up, I feel like might...
For worldwide distribution too.
That's like, what I mean. So I feel like that might deter them from letting him tour it.
I mean, we'll see. I mean, as the movie gets closer to coming out, we'll get like updates. Like, you know, like you said,
it's Kevin Smith. He's going to tell us the whole movie.
Yeah, yeah. we'll figure it out. But Either way, I'm there. If he tours it, I'm buying tickets. I'm going to go watch it. But yes, what do you guys think about the new Kevin Smith comedy, the 4:30 movie being acquired by Saban Films? Are you excited about it? Do you not care? Let us know in the comments as we move on to our next story. And Nicholas, I have a funny feeling we're going to talk about comic book stuff on this show.
What?
Can you believe it?
Yes, that is correct. And our next stories come to us from Deadline. Big things are happening over at DC, specifically the DCU with James Gunn, who's
you don't say.
Deep into production on his Superman movie. Mm-hmm. Well, he announced in his slate a slew of other films that would be in development, one of which being Supergirl, based on, more specifically, Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Is that the full name, or are they just calling it Supergirl?
I believe it's... I don't know if that's the name of the movie, but that is what it's based on, yeah.
Well, they are currently in talks with a director, and not only a director, one that I quite like, and that is Craig Gillespie.
Yes, yes. I'm going to take this directly from Deadline. Cruella and I, Tonya filmmaker Craig Gillespie is in talks to direct Supergirl for Warner Brothers and DC Studios. We can tell you first.
Okay, Deadline.
Yeah, fucking chill. The plan is for DC to shoot the movie in Q4 after they've completed James Gunn's Superman, which is shooting in Georgia for a July 11th, 2025 theatrical release. DC bosses Gunn and Safran are producing. DC EVP Chantal Nong is executive producing. We hear. So here's what I find interesting.
This one's next.
It's next, yeah.
That's next, yeah.
And James Gunn, I just kind of went on his social media, and he basically said, look, this is the slate, but the stories aren't so interconnected that they have to come out in a certain order. We're just going to make what's ready. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's an interesting dynamic. I like that. Yeah. You know, that's very cool. And that it also makes sense why Supergirl, even if Supergirl doesn't show up in Superman, which I think she might.
Well, she's already cast.
Exactly, but that's like, oh, it's starting very soon. Like, no wonder why it's cast. Yeah. You know, like that makes sense. Like
House
this
of
is all starting
Billy
to make
Alcock. Yes, by the way. We've reported that. Yeah.
Yes, and look, I think this is a great choice for a director. I think it's a great choice. I think Craig Gillespie is a very talented filmmaker. His most recent film was Dumb Money, which I didn't love, but to me, it's his weakest film that I've seen of his. And if your worst movie is Dumb Money, you're doing fine. Like his. I, Tonya is amazing.
I think I, Tonya 100% is his best. And
yeah.
I think that what he did with Cruella actually made it interesting, more interesting than it...
That movie was better than it had any right to be, 100%.
Yes.
And, you know, he's also done... He did the Pam and Tommy miniseries. Mm-hmm. He's done a lot of different films. He's a great filmmaker. And this, for this story, I think is interesting because what he likes to do is take something that has a darkness to it and kind of tell that story. And, you know, Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow is a very different kind of darker type of Supergirl story.
Well, it'd be interesting, too, because he even said, James Gunn said, like, in his slate, like, it's going to be an interesting dichotomy because we're going to watch Superman, who is raised on Earth by these loving parents, and Supergirl, who wasn't.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would almost be interesting, like, I could almost see, like, her sort of coming in at the end of Superman and then Supergirl kind of picking up right there.
Yeah.
And getting like the flashback and then going forward, it'd be interesting.
It very much so could happen. Other films that he's directed, by the way, is he did the remake of Fright Night in 2011 with
that.
Colin Farrell, I believe. He also did The Finest Hours, which I thought was a perfectly fine movie with Chris
didn't
Pine.
See that one either.
And most importantly, though, he directed Mr. Woodcock. So
that one,
we're dealing with a master here.
Oh no, he did also. Hold on, Lars and the Real Girl.
Yes, he did.
Which is a great one.
That movie is great.
So,
it is great.
If anything gets me excited, I think that's his best movie.
It's very good.
No, I, Tonya, that one.
Yeah, I, Tonya is great. But also, I know that there's going to be some pushback of just like, oh, like I'm kind of surprised that they don't have a female filmmaker making this. Mm-hmm. And I think that they kind of just hired the best person who would fit the job. And I think that if you look at Craig Gillespie's past work, his work with female leads is astounding. Like mm-hmm. I, Tonya, Cruella, like what we were just talking about, he does amazing work.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's not going to be an issue, like whether it's through a male or female gaze, because one, it is written by a woman, and I think that it's not necessarily a need. You don't need to direct and have a woman director. And here's the good news, ready? I bet you one of the reasons why there's not a female director on this is because they're all busy getting work because of the past few years of the progress we've made of female directors getting these new opportunities. So that's a great problem to have. And I think, like I said, I think Craig Gillespie is a great choice.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. I'm very excited. And I want to speak a minute on just sort of the group that he has, James Gunn has acquired right now for directing, which also might speak a little bit to also that too, because there is a notable lack of female directors thus far.
Yeah.
But these movies are still very early in development. There's so many projects that need people attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
But the names he's collecting is interesting because it's sort of like an anti-Marvel route. In the early stages, where Marvel was sort of acquiring these filmmakers, really kind of indie, out of the woodworking, you know, your John Watts, your Taika Waititis.
Your Russo brothers.
Your Russo brothers, your James Gunns.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the names he's acquiring were, if you're kind of familiar with film and keep up with film, these are all names where you go, oh.
I know who that is.
I know him right off the bat. Like, you don't have to tell me the movies they've directed, you know, because we have currently James Mangold is directing Swamp Thing. You know, he's done Logan. You know, his weakest movies are probably the Wolverine movies that aren't aren't Logan.
Yeah. I mean, he's also done 310 to Yuma. He did Ford v. Ferrari.
Ford v. Ferrari, which is great.
Yeah.
He most recently did Indiana Jones, which had its issues.
Yeah.
But I think that's also kind of a heavy-handed studio. You know,
Andy
Muschietti now is doing Batman the Brave and the or just The Brave and the Bold after just coming off of The Flash, where he directed technically three Batmen.
Yeah.
But at least two of them with action scenes, which... I'd be remiss if I didn't say that I do have hesitation on Andy Muschietti doing Batman, but I thought the action was fine. It was more of the handling of the characters, but I think that was more indicative of a greater studio issue. And, you know, now you have Craig Gillespie coming into the fold. So he's definitely acquiring an interesting take, and I'd be curious if he's going to kind of keep with that same level of like, oh, you've heard of this filmmaker. Or if he's going to kind of reach back into his own indie roots, look for people in that realm, or even go for like a fucking big swing of a name.
Yeah. And there's no director on The Authority yet, right? It's just they've cast one of The Authority members because they're on Superman?
That is correct, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, no, you bring up a good point. Like, it's an interesting group of people. The only one that surprises me is Andy Muschietti, and it has nothing to do with his work. I like his work. I liked The Flash, and I liked it a lot, especially the first part.
I think it'll be really good if they really, because I think The Flash was a big movie, and I think that kind of very heavy, with all the production issues that it had, just even before Andy Muschietti, when three directors ago were attached to it, you know, I think
he's the one that got it to the finish line.
He's the one that got it to the finish line, and I think that the emotional beats of that movie work quite well, and it does have, you know, these AI issues, the greater multiverse thing. So I think if you give him a very focused script for a Batman Brave and the Bold movie, I think he could make that work.
Yeah, and I also, the only reason why the choice surprised me is because it's connected to the old regime.
You would think he would just want a full clean slate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But other than that, his abilities I have no qualms with.
No, yeah, I mean, he's definitely getting directors that have a fairly decent resumes here, and it's not like that's a risk, let's see how that goes, you know.
No, 100%. What do you guys think about Craig Gillespie directing Supergirl for the DCU, and what do you think about the directors he's gathered up so far for that universe? Let us know in the comments as we move on to our next story. Speaking of directors, Nick, this is a fun one.
It is a fun one indeed. Our next one comes to us from Variety. Matrix 5 is officially in the works with Drew Goddard as director. And Lana Wachowski is set as executive producer on the
film. So, fuck yeah, dude. Listen, I love Drew Goddard, okay? I love him so much. I do think he's a better writer than he is a director.
So, Drew Goddard, for those not fully familiar, he did Cabin in the Woods, which is a great movie, I think. And he also did Bad Times at the El Royale,
which by the way, people fucking sleep on Bad Times at the El Royale. Movie. That movie is great. Every time I kind of bring it up in film circles, people are like, oh, like it's okay. It's not okay. That movie is fucking great.
Didn't he also have some early involvement with Daredevil?
Did he have early involvement in Daredevil, you ask? Oh, do I have the answer? He was the original showrunner.
I thought you were just going to go, yes.
Yeah, but he was the original showrunner. He wrote the first two episodes. The first two episodes are Drew Goddard's. He also wrote an episode of Defenders, I think. But he left showrunning duties because he was supposed to go direct Sinister Six for Sony. But, yes, he wrote the two scripts that are the reason why it's canon now. So, yes.
He also has writing. He wrote Cloverfield.
And he wrote The Martian.
And World War Z.
Yeah, the dude works.
Here's the thing about it. And there is literally nothing about this movie outside of that it is a fifth Matrix movie, but that does not necessarily denote Matrix 5.
No.
It is just a fifth Matrix movie.
Correct.
There's no script yet, to my understanding, and there's nothing about the movie. Just, we don't know if any of the original cast are returning, who it's following. Is it following some of the new people that they brought in, such as Yahya Abdul-Mateen?
Yeah.
You know, Neil Patrick Harris was running around, Jonathan Groff, you know, there's nothing about it.
But yeah, it's a great point, and I'm actually going to pull this from the article, and this is why everyone should be excited, okay? Because I know Matrix 5, you're like, but this is very exciting. From the Variety article, it's not clear who from the Matrix universe, Keanu Reeves, Carrie-Anne Moss, have anchored all these prior movies, will return in this iteration. Plot details haven't been revealed, but Warner Brothers Motion Pictures president of production, Jesse Ehrman, teased that the story will advance the fantasy world without straying too far from what made the series a success. This is why you should be excited. Drew came to Warner Brothers with a new idea he pitched that we all believe would be an incredible way to continue the Matrix world, both by honoring what Lana and Lily began over 25 years ago and offering a unique perspective on his own love of the series and characters. Basically, Drew Goddard went to Warner Brothers and said, yo, I want to make a fucking Matrix movie, and here's how we're going to fucking do it. And Warner Brothers was like, holy fuck, yeah, that sounds good. Let's do that. So I'm very excited about Drew Goddard making a new Matrix movie. And just honestly, forget that it's Matrix. Drew Goddard is making a new film. I'm simply there. It works just like that. So what do you guys think about Drew Goddard making a new Matrix movie? Let us know in the comments below as we move on to our next story. Nicholas, what do you got for us next?
Our next story comes to us from Deadline, and boy, is this one a doozy.
Doozy?
Well, not really. It's all good news, but the internet does not want you to believe that.
The internet makes it a doozy.
And that is that the Fantastic Four movie that Marvel Studios is making has cast their Silver Surfer.
Yes.
And that will be the female version of the character, Shala Ball, played by Julia Garner, which is great casting.
It is great casting, and I'm going to pull this from Deadline. With four actors set to play the iconic members of the super team, Marvel Studios' Fantastic Four has now set its sight on who will play Silver Surfer, and it looks like they're going with one of the town's biggest rising stars. Sources tell Deadline that Emmy winner Julia Gardner is set to play the iconic comic book character in Marvel Studios' Fantastic Four. Pedro Pascal will play Reed Richards, Vanessa Kirby, Sue Storm, Joseph Quinn, Johnny Storm, Eben Moss-Bacra, Ben Grimm. WandaVision helmer Matt Shackman is directing The Fantastic Four off a script by Josh Friedman, Jeff Kaplan, and Eric Pearson and Ian Springer. Production will begin this summer and is set to bow in July 25th, 2025. Marvel Studios had no comment, which means it's true.
Can you go ahead and just reread the first sentence of the second paragraph?
Sure.
Mainly like the first five words.
Sources tell Deadline that Emmy winner Julia Gardner is set to play the iconic comic book character.
Emmy winner.
Yeah. And while plot details of the film are unknown, sources say Gardner will play the Shala Ball version of Silver Surfer from the comics. This is great casting.
A character from the comics, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, apparently the internet doesn't know.
Yeah, or doesn't want to believe.
Or doesn't want to believe.
And been there since the beginning with Silver Surfer.
Yes, correct.
And with the rumors that this film takes place in an alternate universe, there's probably room for, oh my god, what's Silver Surfer's fucking name? What's his fucking name?
I have no idea.
This is going to bug the shit out of me. Hold on.
Ned. Nathan.
No.
Neil.
Why was that funny?
Doug.
Norrin Rad.
There was an N.
You were close.
Yes.
Yes. There's room for Norrin Rad. But, look, this is great casting. It's great news. Some people on the internet are getting all twisted up about it because, take a guess, but...
Well, what confuses me about that is they're not gender swapping a character.
Yeah.
The character exists. They're just saying, this is the character we're going with.
But it's not the character they wanted, Nicholas.
To quote Nelson Peltz, why do I need an all-female Marvel?
God. I'm so glad he's not taking over Disney.
No, but like, it's insane. That's a great... Why are we not excited about a... three-time Emmy winner, four-time nominated actress being cast in a movie to play an iconic character.
Yeah. No, it's great news. It's fantastic.
Also, if you ask me, with the rumors of it being in an alternate universe, I think it would be neat to then watch her fight the other Silver Surfer.
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
You're going to tell me that's not cool?
Yeah, and this probably means Galactus is involved because Silver Surfer and Galactus are very closely tied. This is cool. This makes my brain go, does Galactus straight up eat their universe and they end up in the MCU? That would be neat.
That would be neat. And then you can have this whole dynamic of, let's say, the main Marvel universe has the, what was the name of the male Silver Surfer?
Norrin Rad.
Norrin Rad.
Yeah.
There, and then them competing to try to be the Galactus' herald of the main MCU. It's setting up for so many good storylines.
Yeah. And Galactus will most likely be a Celestial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see nothing but good things. The internet's
wrong. Me too. As usual. I will say, though, it was interesting with this, because normally when like an announcement like this happens, there's instant, wah, bah, 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 and it like doesn't stop. But this one, it was like, like people were like, oh, wait. Like, maybe I'm being stupid and like falling off, which was fun to see. But no, look, this is great news. This Fantastic Four movie, I just get continually excited about.
Yes.
One, Matt Shackman did a great job of WandaVision. He was a great television director. Two, I love the cast that they have. Three, all of the promotional images does make it seem like it's in an alternate universe, which is a new thing for the MCU for the most part. Some of Doctor Strange 2 took place in a new world. Looks like pretty much all of Deadpool 3 will take place in an alternate world. I think it's a cool trend. Yeah. Keep doing it. I'd love it.
So now we have a Silver Surfer cast.
Mm-hmm.
So we will probably most likely have a Galactus if that's where it's leaning. Mm-hmm. What do you cast as a Galactus? Is that that's a voice role, right?
Most likely.
And maybe some mocap that's like enhanced.
Yeah.
You need a voice for that one, right?
Yeah.
That's got to be. I don't know. I don't know who you go with for that.
I got it.
Go on.
Michael Cera.
Well, actually, speaking of Michael Cera, I think he'd be a good Herbie.
He'd be a great Herbie.
That's the robot, right, Herbie?
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
To be honest, I think you can cast anyone from Arrested Development, and they'd be great Herbies.
I'll be good.
And there's not a bad one there. Correct. Personally, I think Herbie should be Natasha Lyonne.
Oh, that would be so good.
It'd be a great one.
Yeah.
Be a great one. Honestly, Michael Cera, great.
Yeah.
Jason Bateman would be quite good. David Cross would kill it.
Yes, he would.
No, there's a lot of great casting you could do for the fun robot.
Yeah. I don't know, like, F. Murray Abraham did a great job voicing for Moon Knight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, someone of his stature should do, the Galactus voice.
I would have loved, and it's very sad to say that he's no longer with us, mm-hmm. but Andre Brower would have
crushed it,
as Galactus.
Yeah. Just let Kevin Feige do his normal speaking voice.
Javier Bardem?
That'd be cool. That'd be really cool.
He'd be a good one.
Yeah.
I don't know. They need gravitas.
Yes.
And I think a unique voice as well would help.
Yeah, I think so too. I'd be curious to see where that goes. But regarding Silver Surfer, the Shalabal version played by Julia Gardner, are you guys excited? What do you think about this casting? Let us know in the comments as we move on to our next story. Nicholas, what do you got for us next?
Our next story comes to us from The Hollywood Reporter. And that is that Olivia Wilde, Lucky Chap, Simon Kinberg are all teaming to adapt Rob Liefeld's comic Evangeline.
Yes, Evangeline.
Evangeline.
Which is very cool. I've never read the comic, but that sounds very cool. The reason why I wanted to kind of bring up this story is because Olivia Wilde's directing again.
Yes.
And it was about time, because look, Don't Worry Darling was something, and there was a lot of drama behind the scenes there, but Booksmart is so fucking good. And I think whatever drama that was going on in Olivia Wilde's life with the divorce and all that stuff, I think that's past her now. And she can now focus on making just a great new movie. And the fact that Margot Robbie's Lucky Chap is involved, Margot Robbie's a great producer, and Simon Kinberg, who is not directing, so we're fine. I like him as a writer very much so.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is just interesting, and I'm glad to see kind of Olivia Wilde take another swing at directing, kind of maybe can get her reputation back after Don't Worry Darling.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I'm not familiar with the comic, but I remember there was a while there where it seemed like Olivia Wilde might have been directing like a Spider-Woman movie.
Yeah, but that
fizzled out. But it's interesting to see that she's really doubling down on wanting to do something comic related there.
Yeah.
And this is also coming in the news. Like, didn't Rob Liefeld say he's not retiring? Is he writing a memoir? I remember some article
that was
coming out about him.
Mm-hmm.
She is not they really wanted to make it clear that Margot Robbie is not attached to Star as the character.
Yeah.
I noticed that a lot through the article.
Yeah. Well, when you're the face of a company and you're also the face of Barbie, you gotta make things clear.
Having played
Harley Quinn.
Harley Quinn for multiple movies. Makes sense.
Just for those that don't know, Evangeline, I'm taking this from The Hollywood Reporter, debuted in 1995 and centered on a fallen angel cast to Earth. She's entrusted to find and protect the One, a person who is the key to protecting humanity and from demons and other monsters. Sounds cool to me. Maybe I might pick up a copy if they have like a little graphic novel version over at the store.
Type thing. Yeah. That could be good.
Could be really good. What do you guys think about Olivia Wilde returning to direct Evangeline from Simon Kinberg and Margot Robbie? Let us know in the comments as we move to our last news story topic of the day, and it is a fucking good one, though, Nicholas. What do we have, Nicholas?
We are really hitting every corner of pop culture today.
Yeah.
We have done Marvel,
mm-hmm.
we've done DC, and now we're moving on to Star Wars.
Yes.
And that is Bo Willimon.
Mm-hmm. Willimon.
Willimon?
Willimon.
Willimon is currently set to co-write James Mangold's Star Wars movie.
Yes, and it is tentatively titled Dawn of the Jedi, which is fucking cool.
Pretty good name.
First of all.
Good name.
But for those who might be thinking, James Mangold, we knew he was making a Star Wars movie. Dawn of the Jedi, that's cool. Bo Willimon, who's that? Well, Bo Willimon was the showrunner of House of Cards, which was an amazing show. Also, how is he related to Star Wars? I'll tell you. He wrote the prison arc on Andor.
Which was the best arc.
Yes. This guy is a killer writer. And the fact that he's working with James Mangold.
He's a killer director, if you ask me.
He's a killer director on a Star Wars movie. This shit excites me. I'm very excited about this. And I want to pull this quote from the Hollywood Reporter article. Yep. When I first started talking to Kathy Kennedy about doing one of these pictures, what occurred to me was thinking about what kind of genre of a movie within Star Wars I wanted to do. This is James Mangold speaking. And I thought about a biblical epic, like the Ten Commandments, about the dawning of the Force. Where did the Force come from? When did we discover it? When did we learn how to use it?
Yes.
Let's fucking
go. Said to
be,
25,000 years before anything?
Yes. Let's go. I really love this.
Now, here's a question. One. Excellent addition. Mm-hmm. I think that the prison arc was probably my favorite arc
mm-hmm.
of the Andor series.
Yeah.
And I think that House of Cards was a great show.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm curious about, though, is because, as mentioned earlier on the show, James Mangold is also directing a movie over at DC.
Yes.
So I'm curious timeline-wise, who gets the answer. Who gets him first?
Star Wars.
Star Wars gets him first.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Where was this confirmed? Did he say that?
It was confirmed in a couple places. Okay. One, it was in the trades. It was in the Jeff Snyder newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if James Gunn confirmed it himself, but he did say that Swamp Thing is later. Like, that was his kind of...
Gotcha.
And I think Star Wars, I think they start shooting this, if not the end of this year, then early, first thing next year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Neat.
Very neat. I'm very excited about this. Right. I think this is the next one after Mandalorian and Grogu, movie-wise.
Oh, so we're getting this in, 27.
Yeah. But I think they're going to shoot it before that.
When's Rey's?
Great question. They keep pushing that movie, but yeah.
So the next Star Wars movie is Mando.
Yes. It comes out in 2026.
Got it.
They just pushed it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
All right, then.
I think they're pushing a lot of... You've noticed a lot of movies went to 2026 because IATSE's negotiations are coming up and they want to be ready.
Ready.
Yeah.
Just be ready to go.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Makes sense.
Yes. But I'm fucking thrilled by this news. I love Bo Willimon. I love James Mangold. I think this movie is going to be great. What do you guys think about Bo Willimon co-writing Dawn of the Jedi with James Mangold? What a sentence.
What a sentence indeed.
Let us know in the comments below as we move on to the box office.
The box office.
I'm going to be real with you. I made predictions last week. Did not write them down. Don't care to dig to find out what I predicted.
All right.
So we're just going to dive right into this. And when we get to our predictions for next time, please leave your predictions below. And if you're right, we'll shout you out on the show. Nicholas.
Daltonus.
Take a little... Thank you for doing that. Take a little guess as to what came in number one.
I'm going to say that there is a monkey involved.
Correct.
And I'm going to go with it being the bigger monkey, Godzilla Kong.
Yes. Dropped 60% from week one to week two, but it came in first with $31.7 million in its second week. Coming in second, Monkey Man.
Nice.
Making $10.1 million.
Big drop off from 1 to 2.
It is, but Universal already got that 9 back. They just got to get that marketing back now.
Easy.
Coming in third, dropping 42% from week 2 to week 3, was Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Coming in fourth was The First Omen, making $8.3 million in its opening weekend, which I'm still going to watch. I'm going to try to go watch it tonight, but I also know myself and I get sleepy, so maybe I won't. Coming in fifth was Kung Fu Panda 4, staying in there, dropping only 24% from week 4 to week 5, making another $7.8 million. I'm now going to take a little bit of a deeper dive into the numbers here. Godzilla X Kong: The New Empire has now made $302 million worldwide on a budget of $135. It's at 2.2. Profitability is just around the corner. It'll happen next week, for sure. Monkey Man, budget-wise, was made for 10. It has made 10, so it's on that route. But it already made its money back when it sold to Netflix and then to Universal.
Yeah.
They're fine on that level. I'd like to see it make around 20, 25. I think that's what would get Universal pleased with the result, probably.
Well, here's the thing. I'd be curious because this was its first week.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be curious because this is a movie that maybe not a lot of people have known about.
Mm-hmm.
But that a lot of people have been very positively reviewing.
Yes.
So I wonder if this is a case where that word of mouth, the positive word of mouth, yes, is really going to give it a bump, and this thing might kind of, I don't want to say skyrocket.
Yeah, but kind of maintain.
Yeah, because like I think 100 million is out of the question.
Yeah, for sure.
Easily. But to go to 30?
Yeah.
Could be possible with the positive word of mouth.
I think so. And worldwide, it's made 12. It had a little bit, 2 extra million internationally.
Yeah.
The only thing that's going to hurt it is it has a B+ cinema score.
Mm.
So we'll see where that takes us.
And if you haven't watched it, check out our review on the channel.
Yes, please do. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire has made $138 million worldwide, and the production budget was $100. It's made 1.4 times the budget. It's going to get close on if it's going to be profitable or not.
They gave that too much money.
Just a tad bit too much money. First Omen has not opened internationally, so just that 8.3 is what it's made. I don't have a budget listed, but let me see if I can find it. You know what sucks about Googling things about The First Omen? The First Omen movie.
The original Omen?
Yes, because there's several Omen movies. All right, so pulling from Deadline, First Omen had a production cost of $30 million, which is more than I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still not crazy. But it only has 8. That's also a movie that's been getting very good word of mouth. I was very surprised by the positive reviews because the trailers were not good.
Yeah.
But we'll see where that goes from here as well. 8.3. And Kung Fu Panda 4 has now made $408 million worldwide.
Yeesh.
Good God. On a budget of 85. Bruh. Made like 4.8 times this budget back. They are killing it. Good for DreamWorks. I want to dive into a couple other movies here. Dune Part 2. The worldwide total is now at 638. It'll probably end its theatrical run at around 645, considering that it goes available for PVOD soon. Arthur the King has made $22 million worldwide. Got that number up. And let's see here. Imaginary, another horror movie from Blumhouse, which I also still haven't seen, has made $34 million worldwide on a budget of 13, 2.7. Nailed it. Just nailed that profitability. Yep. Late Night with the Devil, which is a great film, is now worldwide at $9 million. Good for them. When you watch it, there is no way it was made for more than one. So I'm sure they're very pleased with that.
Oh, yeah.
If you get an official budget, by the way, anyone listening, for Late Night with the Devil, let me know and I'll do the comparisons. Let's see. Problemista has only made $2 million. That's a shame. That's a great movie.
You watched that one, right?
I did.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. And Love Lies Bleeding has made $8 million worldwide. I wonder if that has a budget listed. Let me see.
The best I could find on Late Night with the Devil was it looked like World of Real, which I'm not familiar with, said with a budget rumored to be less than $2 million.
That seems...
I don't know what World of Real's credibility, where they're pulling that from, but that's the only thing I can see saying.
So. I will say hearing that tracks
with
like what I expected it to be.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, the box office is slowly kind of... There's a lot of movies coming out.
There are.
And it's kind of... You're seeing that comeback happen, and I think it's time for predictions.
Yes. May I ask real quick before we do that, what did Ghostbusters make this week, as well as Kung Fu Panda?
Ghostbusters made $9 million.
Okay.
Kung Fu Panda made $7.8 million.
Okay. I have some crazy ones then.
I know exactly where your brain is going. As soon as you ask me that, I know exactly where your brain is going. Let me pull up what comes out next week.
Civil War.
Yes. There might be another one.
The Shrek 2 re-release.
Oh.
Which is a bit of a wild card.
Yeah. So, okay.
Number one, Arcadia, starring Nick Cage.
Do you want to go first?
I'll go first.
All right, hit me.
I'm going to be so wrong.
Okay.
All right, number one, Godzilla Kong.
Okay.
Number two, Civil War.
Okay.
Number three, Monkey Man.
Okay.
Number four, The First Omen.
Okay.
Number five, The Shrek 2 re-release.
Okay.
I think that Monkey Man and The First Omen are going to have very positive word of mouth, and I think that they're going to get bumps from it.
I'm going to let you save yourself. Look at how many Showtime Shrek 2 has.
I don't know. How many?
One.
Oh, never mind.
Well, it had one on Thursday. Let me look for Friday. Maybe it has more on Friday. Friday, it has two.
Okay, I'm not doing that then.
I wanted to give you the opportunity to save yourself.
Godzilla Kong, Civil War, Monkey Man, First Omen, Ghostbusters.
That's pretty good. I like that. All right.
I'm really banking on Monkey Man and First Omen getting bumps.
All right. All right. I'm going to take a little bit of a risk here.
All right.
Number one, Civil War.
Okay.
Because I think if Godzilla Kong drops another 50, that's a 15. And I think Civil War, just from morbid curiosity of it being an election year, I think people are going to go more than 15 million over.
It is an A24 movie. Mm-hmm. Or distribution? Or did they make it?
It's A24. It's their most expensive movie.
All right.
I'm going to go that. I'm going to go two Godzilla Kong, three Monkey Man, four Forced Omen. And I think Ghostbusters is going to stay in there in number five. I think it'll just barely beat out Kung Fu Panda.
All right, so the only thing we have swapped is Godzilla and Civil War. Are you kind of in alignment with the Monkey Man First Omen bumps?
Yes, yeah. But I'm thinking, should I switch out Ghostbusters and Kung Fu Panda? Because
that's a gamble.
The only family movie in there is Ghostbusters. If I keep my...
You gave me an out, so I'll give you one to change your answer now if you'd like.
I will stick to it.
All right.
I think it will just stay over Kung Fu Panda.
Well, there we have it, folks.
There we have it.
Leave your predictions and tell us we're wrong.
Yes, and if you're right, we'll shout you out on the show. Absolutely.
One day someone will comment with their predictions.
One day it'll happen. One day we'll get views. But yeah, that'll do it for today's show, guys. Thank you so much for watching or listening, however you're taking in our show. We appreciate you greatly. Please consider subscribing to the other platform as well, just to, you know, help us out a little bit. Nick, you got anything you want to add?
All of our social media and the audio versions of the show, links can be found in the description as well. And we had a few movie reviews coming out this week, so be sure to check those out if you haven't already.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for watching, and we'll see you on the next one.